I gotta be honest, I'm kind of nervous right now.
Are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
Why are you nervous?
Because it's been so long since we've done one of these, and I don't know. I just feel weird. I feel I'm a different person now than I was last time we did a podcast.
Oh, you are? You're a very different person.
Yeah.
You're older. You're wiser.
I'm medicated.
Yes. But, you know, don't look at it as being medicated. You've been able to bring everything into focus. You've put a pair of glasses on is what you've done.
Mm.
Very tasteful glasses. Not big goggles. Very tasteful goggles.
Not Coke bottle glasses like you
very
have.
Very thin plastic.
Mm.
You know, and they frame your face perfectly. Just think about it like that.
Our last podcast was with Spud, and he brought us glasses. By the way, there's a pair for you somewhere
yes.
around here.
Yes, oh, that's right.
I don't know where they are. Welcome back, everybody. Tony Gump in the house.
I'm here as well, guys. Hello.
Yes, sir. And we're all back together. Is it not a weird feeling for everybody to be back in here?
I know it's weird for me. It's been, what, 10 days or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we were doing two or three a week, and here we are, like, skipping, I don't know. I don't know what the people that watch this podcast, what did they do? What have they done with their time? Did they have to go outside? Like, what happened?
Maybe they hate us now.
Yeah,
that'd be awful. I'm kind of self-conscious right now.
Mm.
Well, if they were half as busy as we are, there's no way they'd have time to watch.
Well, that's true.
that's a good point.
I would agree.
I am a different person than I was 10 days ago, and it's been well documented for our radio listeners. I mean, I'm on the gimmicks at this point, on the Rattler, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the Xanax and the
He's
Lexapro.
Heavily medicated, everybody. Heavily.
And how long were we talking about my panic attacks? Wasn't that like when we had Leland on here? When was that? Like October?
Yeah, your panic attacks have been happening since like October, September.
Good Lord.
And your anxiety as long as I've known you.
My doctor asked me like when did it start? And I told him I was like, I don't know. I think it was like January or something. So it was last year?
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Let me look back at these videos real quick and see. When did we have Leland in here?
I want to say Leland was it early November, late October?
5 months ago. The date was, what is this date? It doesn't say.
It's December.
October 24th.
That's not 5 months ago, though.
Well, then what is it?
Well, That's six months ago.
That's 6 months ago, yeah. See.
What is today? But today's the 23rd.
Today's
so
the 23rd.
Tomorrow it would be 6 months.
It would be.
So it's only been 5 months.
It would have been 6 months if there wasn't February 29th.
Dang.
We should do a podcast about that.
No, let's not.
Because, I mean, really, we don't really know what time it is, really. Or we don't really know what day it is. Think about it.
Yeah.
We don't. We don't have a freaking clue. We think we have control.
We're in some sort of alternate universe, I'm sure.
That's weird.
You've been hyping up this parody. You've been talking about it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I encouraged you to release it on the radio show, which you refused to do. You said you wanted it on this podcast.
Yes.
And so do you want to do the honors? Tell us what it is.
This is a parody song I think you're all like.
That's it?
Oh, well, I mean, it's about Joe Biden. It's very funny to make fun of him.
Okay. What's it a parody of?
Oh, it's a parody of Green Day, our favorite liberal group. The song American Idiot.
Okay. Classic.
Yes, did not necessarily have to change a lot of lyrics.
No.
For it. But yeah, here it is. It was fun.
Are we going to get dinged on Facebook for this?
No.
You don't think so?
Covered under parallel.
Okay. You go. That threw me off.
Biden is an American idiot. Dementia riddled and hides behind the media. Trump has got the left in mass hysteria. We don't want a socialist America.
Okay, I'm vibing.
Says it's okay. Administration backed up tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm not a part of transgender America. I'm not brainwashed by far left America. As they spew their dumbest propaganda, we're watching horror at this extravaganza. I've finally gotten your attention as a legal state of our nation. Alejandro Mayorkas says it's okay.
Oh, nice. The mariachi band in there.
I like that Muppet.
Even this?
There he is.
I love that. Alec.
Nice. Oh, good stuff.
Yeah,
congratulations. That was good. It came in a little hot, startled me there at the beginning.
Yeah.
But you just you had it coming in hot and heavy, so good.
Yeah,
good job.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
You've done a lot of those over the years, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sitting at a little over 200 parodies in my career.
Really?
Yeah.
I honestly thought it'd be more than that.
There's some I don't consider parodies. I have a certain level. I mean, if I really counted all of them, it would probably be more like 250. Because at one point I was working for the American Comedy Network, where you had to put out a parody a week to get paid. So there's a lot of pressure with that. But I've got my this is amazing. My very first parody I ever did was in 1989, and it was about Donald Trump.
Really?
Yeah.
In 89?
Mm-hmm. It was the method of Marla's love, the Marla Maple thing.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I'll have to get that because there's we got a old video of it.
Wait, what is the American Comedy Network? Like, where did those parodies play?
Nationwide, they were available to any of the stations that subscribe. So, I mean, it was played in New York, Los Angeles.
Like, what kind of stations? Like, just
you name it.
Local TV stations.
No,
sitcoms.
No, not TV, radio.
Oh, radio stations.
Yeah, mostly morning radio.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, they're a team of three writers. Of course, mom's always best.
What was your favorite parody you've ever done?
Come on, man. Wow. Whoa.
That's easy for me. I already know the answer. Tony knows the answer.
I know the answer.
Let's see if
me.
You get it right.
Fiddlebird.
Nope. That's not it.
No.
Close.
No. Oh, Obama's Pants.
Obama's Pants.
That's a classic.
Yes. Obama's Pants.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I don't know. I go through certain phases where I'm like, man, this is the best one I've ever done. I love it. I love it. Love it. But
well, you forgot about Obama's Pants because it was a collab of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it
Tony
was,
Gump
and I thought it was
Amy.
The greatest before we had to tone it down because it was too hot for radio. But the first original version that we had to tone down was awesome.
Yeah.
When we release it, we need to put a gray E on it.
Yeah.
And
explicit.
Release the original. Yeah.
Good stuff. We'll have to revisit that at some point.
Yes.
Because you are quite the parody king.
Yes, I've discovered a bunch of parodies. I'd forgotten that for a while. A couple of years ago, I was doing a parody. It didn't last too long, but a parody a week for Dixon and Vining. And there's some pretty darn good stuff in there.
Do you still
and I only got one play?
You were doing something called Bird's Eye View, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
You're not doing it anymore.
Oh, I
are
hadn't
you?
Done that in it's been over 2 years.
Okay.
I mean, I had only done it for a few months, but there's some good stuff. I'd like to.
Because I love Dixon. I love Vine. But then you can't steal my producer. That's not fair.
Yeah.
Like I don't get Steve to come over and do stuff for me. I'm just kidding. Val's the boss. I really have no say so over that. But anyway, yeah, you do a good job, and I don't know what I would do without you. I'm not trying to get sentimental,
you
but
would be just fine.
Yeah. You have you've played a big role in the show. I think I do, however, blame you for some of my medical, you know, emotional anxiety problems. I think it's been contagious. And so I'm in the current situation that I'm in because of you. Mm-hmm. But that's okay because I'm fine now.
You know, I really appreciate your backhanded compliment. it hurts me a little bit right now, but I know you hurt me because you love me.
Right. But it's also a way of saying we are brothers in
psychosis.
anxiety disorders. Like, we're brothers for life on that front, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? I've been dealing with anxiety since you were in diapers.
Yeah.
So I am the old wise master as far as that goes.
One of the big things that has happened to me, and I don't know if it was the same for you or, you know, Tony's not left out of this either. He's dealt with this, and he kind of coached me through
now,
some of it.
I can tell you the first time I got real anxiety was after I got robbed in a bank June 9th, 2009. That's when the first time I started having panic attacks after I got robbed.
Yeah. Mine always were triggered by being alone, driving in the car, getting the show together.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's where all mine, especially as of late, they would sneak up on me in those moments. And I would just deteriorate, like, rapidly.
You know what? That makes sense because that's when that voice in your head has an opportunity to creep forward.
Yeah. Well, and my mom said I was always the type of kid, like, I couldn't be alone. Like, I always had to be around somebody. And that's why I always kind of, some of it, I was doing it jokingly, like, I'm a basket case and I don't need to be alone with my own thoughts. And I said that, but I don't even think I was really serious about it until now. And I'm like, okay, maybe that was actually real. And like, I don't need to be alone with my own thoughts.
But you know what? It's important that you can be alone with your own thoughts, because I was the exact same way. And then when the divorce happened and the kids and the dog and the two cats, and I realized I was alone and I wasn't on the radio. There was no one there for me. And my car had just broken down. I was living in a very bad neighborhood. Someone got killed the night before I moved out of the apartment complex.
Wow.
But I learned, seriously, I learned to be comfortable with who I am. So, you know, I'm okay. I'm okay with that. The key is that you know, you'll spend time with yourself, but then you continue on about your life.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to convince yourself, well, I'm just going to start being home by myself here. You know.
A lot of people, you know, obviously with me talking about it as much as I did, and it was probably overkill, I'm not ashamed to say that, but a lot of people would pin it on radio, and they say, it's the stuff you're talking about, it's the topics, it's the political talk, blah, 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 and the stress of that is what's getting to you, but I never felt like that was the case, but it could have been. I always felt like the radio was the escape and the distraction that I needed. But radio can be stressful. That reminds me. Bubba the Love Sponge Show.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all know how much I like this show.
Sure.
Been listening to it for years. So I get home yesterday, and I'm feeling a little bit better, a little bit more like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell Trish, I'm like, man, there was some drama going on Bubba's show. Like, they fired one of their main co-hosts. And they did a big explanation of what happened on their show today. Will you sit down and watch it with me? Now, Bubba's the type of host, and I'm kind of this way as well, where when he's explaining something, it could be a short story, but he'll drag that bad boy out for 4 hours. And then you'll start the show, and you're like, all right, give me the goods. And next thing you know, you're 3.5 hours in, and you're like, well, we still hadn't got to the kicker yet, but I'm going to go ahead and finish the show. He's that type of guy. I think it's probably where I get it from.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so we sat down and we watched the entire 4-hour morning show yesterday afternoon, last night. And in the radio business, there are things that happen that I think can be stress-inducing.
Oh, sure.
And now for him, he's the boss, so he deals with all of it. But even as a measly host, you can still take on some of the stress of the business, thinking, what happens? I mean, when you work for a corporate company, like, what if George Soros buys your company or, you know, whatever? That always kind of lingers in the back of your head.
For sure.
So radio can be stressful. But speaking of Bubba, he went through and explained why he fired his co-host. This is, again, his main co-host. Her name's Anna Hummel.
Man.
And he had to can her from what he explains. And let's actually play this. he explains that they found out that she was trying to get another job at another radio station. You've been in the business long enough to know that's a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go and apply somewhere else and that person you're applying to then turns around and hits up your boss and they're like, hey, we need a reference for this lady. And you're like, wait, what? Like, that'd be you applying for another job, and then they hit me up, and they're like, yeah, John Bird wants to work with us, but he wanted a reference from you. I'd be like, John Bird, what are you doing?
Yeah, that I could see if it was another market, like across the country or whatever. But if it's like something, well, I mean, I guess he's, no matter where she would go,
he'll explain it. Go ahead and play this. She's staying in one of the main markets where they broadcast.
And I get a phone call. And I get a phone call from somebody that we work for. Well, I'll just tell you. Well, no, I'm not going to tell you. it's a major. It's the president of
a radio company.
Of a radio company. And he says to me, hey, I just got a call from the competition. I'm not going to mention any names, or I don't even want to give the competition the, I don't even want to give them any real estate as to who they are, because she might end up over there. But my guy,
there's my buddy,
who I work for, says that he got a call from the competition who he still has some friends over there. You know, like, Seth, you still got some friends over at the Bone. We don't have to talk about you and John Sending being buddies, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you still got some tentacles up in the house, don't you?
I got tenties. I hear things.
My guy says, I just want to let you know that Anna applied to be we have a morning, one of their stations has a morning co-host situation open. That is on a station that plays like, you know, six or seven songs an hour and is morning drive. My competition. So she's applying.
In one of your markets?
Yeah, in one of my markets. Not like it's Atlanta.
For real?
No, for real. Not like it's Charlotte. Not like it's Grand Rapids. But yeah, it was either, you can just, I'm just going to tell you, between Phoenix, Fort Walton Beach, Ocala, Tampa, in Orlando, she had applied and has applied to be a co-host.
No way.
On a morning show.
Not like San Diego, go home.
No, no, no.
Not going to the other coast and not competing with you afternoons.
No. She.
I always liked her, too.
Applied for a morning co-host at one of the cities that I'm currently competing in. And I only have six. So there's only six cities in the entire America.
So you understand this. Again, you've been in the business a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty dirty move. Like, if you want to make a move like that and go to a competitor, what do you do as a radio host or producer
or
co-host?
I mean, you know, what I would do is I'd just be upfront about it.
Talk to your current host about
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, if it's a situation where, you know, you could make more money or whatever, if she didn't even bother to talk to him about it, then she doesn't know how he feels about it.
This is what, in me knowing Bubba just as a listener, because I've never talked to him personally, he would be one of those people that you could go and talk to and say, hey, I'm looking to kind of make a move, and I want to give you a heads up before I do it. But not only did she do that behind his back, when he confronted her about it after he found out, she's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, man.
You can't do that. And then there's more history. There was a guy, their producer, who got let go or fired the previous year, like 1 year earlier, almost to the day. He had stolen somewhere to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars. Actually, may have even been something like $200,000 stole it from the company. And Bubba never even told the story about that until yesterday. And he finally was like, and the guy that stole that money was that girl's boyfriend. No, that's why. Wow. Bubba's been painted as a bad guy for so long in Tampa and really across the country. He has been screwed over so many times.
That's radio.
He's been screwed over on that. He got, you remember the Hogan sex tape? He got screwed mm-hmm. over on that deal. Like, this dude's been railroaded, and where he used to be on Sirius XM and teamed up with Howard and all over the country, and he's kind of, you know, been cornered back down to a much smaller area of where he broadcast, and, you know, he's done a phenomenal job monetizing his show online. But, you know, you don't talk about somebody who gets some bad luck, dude. That's Bubba.
I think it's bad luck, but I got to give him props. He's actually a pretty smart businessman if you look into what he's done. But part of his problem, in my opinion, is too nice, and he gets walked over in a few things.
That's what me and the wife were talking about last night. I said, I think Bubba just trusts too much, and he's almost too loyal to people. And that's the reason the guy stole all that money. That's a tremendous amount of money he stole, but he had been friends with the guy for 20 years. And
he's got proof. Why not go ahead and...
Well, he laid the proof out, and he showed the guy, and he said, here's the deal. I can either fire you or you can resign. And he allowed him to come on air and resign in a way that made it look like he was just leaving for a different job.
I'd go to the police, man.
Well, that's what he should have done. He went through a whole explanation about that, and he still got the ability to do that. But I kind of took this, and Tony Gump being a business owner, mm-hmm. I was like, you got to have a stranglehold on all that stuff. And this is not a shot at Bubba. I think it's a great characteristic to be trusting and to have that kind of loyalty. But you got to have eyeballs on everything as a business owner.
The thing is, he's obviously very creative. He's a creative type. And it's very difficult to be super creative and very businesslike. You know, it's like if you're friends with somebody and they screw you over, like, that happened to me, and that took me through a 10-year ride with hell that ended in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, it was a matter of putting too much trust in somebody. So I think it's naturally a part of being creative. That's why for decades, artists have been getting screwed over.
Yeah.
You know,
you're talking about like in an aspect of being creative is an attribute of that is like being just very trustworthy or trusting people.
Yeah. And not wanting to hurt feelings and things. It's just you allow people to run over you.
Ah, gotcha.
You see?
And that's kind of that's what I've seen with Bubba, too.
Yeah. And it's you know, part of it, I think, is because, well, you know, well, number one, it hurts. I think with a lot of creative types, it hurts. Deep,
yeah,
you know, when something like that happens. So I mean, that's why, you know, you got to have a perfect marriage in terms of having a partner that you can trust.
Mm.
And it's rare, unfortunately.
I gotta say, I feel bad for Bubba just because I've been the boss in different places, and every once in a while you get that one employee who you treat like gold, and then they kind of stab you in the back at the very end and do their own thing or whatever. I can get into it, but they just, you know, they're kind of sad, and I blame the woman for doing that. She should have had a little more loyalty and should have told him right up front what was going on.
Well, especially with the history, and she benefited from the guy stealing. The previous guy that was her boyfriend, like, she was already kind of in this zone of, hey, you know, you're kind of the remnants of this guy that did all this stealing. But Bubba's been railroaded by co-hosts multiple times.
He kept her on when all that happened.
Well, if you go back to the Hogan sex tape, everybody understands how that played out. So the Hogan sex tape was Hogan having relations with Bubba's wife at the time. Hogan was going through a bad divorce, and no matter what you think about this lifestyle, it's whatever. Bubba's like, hey, man, if it'll make you feel better, you know, you can come in here and bang my wife or whatever. You know? I mean, that seems strange, but it's like, you know, he's a trusting guy. Like, he wants to treat his friends right. So that happens. It gets captured on security camera, and somehow one of his co-hosts, who's been a co-host for years and years, gets his hands on that security camera tape and then chops it out to tabloids. And that's how it gets out. And so a co-host, yet another employee, screws the guy over. And, I mean, this is where everything started going downhill for Bubba. I mean, Hogan's suing him. Hogan still ain't talked to him to this day. Like, it was bad. But let me tell you this. Phenomenal, fascinating radio. That's why I bring this up on the podcast, because that is Bubba in his prime, where he's talking about what's going on backstage, being transparent about the drama behind the scenes. I love it.
Now, I can say I've never met Bubba, but I did know Terry, or Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea, and his kid, and I drove his kid's car the day before he wrecked it. I'd be interested to talk to Bubba, you know, to see what happened.
Oh, man. I want Bubba on this podcast.
And I can
so
say the Hogans, Terry and his, and they were really nice guys. Like, in person, greatest guys, so all that other stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Hulk Hogan seems like a kind of the same way, like a loyal guy. And I watched some of these wrestling documentaries, like what's Dark Side of the Ring.
Oh, man, I love
and
that.
And Hogan, you know, he's very loyal to these guys, but once he feels like he's got stabbed in the back,
yeah,
rightfully or wrongfully, he just completely cuts off communication. I think about Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Mm-hmm. They're still not talking. Obviously, the situation with Bubba, which I think Hogan needs to suck it up and talk to Bubba. One, for selfish reasons, because when Hogan used to come on Bubba's show, it was great, great radio. But two, I mean, everybody wants to see the couple get back together. We want to see the bromance. Come on. Get over it.
I'll give Hogan this. Him and Barkley have something in common. I've met a lot of stars. They're the only ones I've talked to where people were coming up to him and they didn't seem bothered. Like, somebody would come up and say, hey, can I have your autograph? And then they'd leave, and other people would be just be like, oh, geez. Well, Hogan and Barkley actually super nice about it and love it. So,
does John Bird count as one of the stars that you've met?
No. Maybe.
No.
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 I mean, you're pretty famous.
Famous for what?
Famous
for being an idiot.
I mean, yeah, but
come on.
It's you know.
I'm just, you know what? I'm just who I am. Sometimes I fall asleep in my car. And
all
I'll
the famous
and
people
know.
Are the same. They're yeah. just like us, believe me.
And all famous people have slept in their car. I mean, not at 60, but they've done it when they were younger.
Excuse me? Yes. What was that again?
60.
60. Excuse
Thank
me.
You. I appreciate that.
Anyway, shout out to Bubba. Come on the podcast, please.
Love you, Bubba.
One of my favorite shows and has been for a very long time. I discovered them when they first came on Sirius XM. I was a big Howard Stern fan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like white trash reality show on live radio. It's the best way I can describe Ooh. That period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this is great. And I credit that show a lot to how I do my show now. I really do. I mean, it's a mix of a lot of different people, but the way they did their stuff has a big influence on what me and you do today on the radio. So Bubba, hit me up, Cole.
Did Bubba ever do Hot Chip Challenge stuff, or?
I don't think so. I think that was my own fascination when the Carolina Reaper came out.
Yeah.
But he did things like Shock the Puss and like Stripper Olympics or something.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, just like we did something, you know, similar to that with the One Chip Challenge. And that was pretty racy.
We did Shock the Irishman.
Yes, we did. We did. That was, you know, it almost got out of hand there, you know, underneath the kilt. But we stretched our boundaries. I always look at my influences as Pee Wee Herman's a big influence. Pee Wee Herman.
Don't forget the actor guy that you look like.
Bubbles.
Oh, not him.
Was that not
Kurt Russell?
Kurt Russell.
Oh, my bad.
A big influence.
Can we real quick Google Bubbles and Kurt Russell?
Okay,
and Kurt Russell.
At least be fair.
We'll do both. We'll do both. Just so I don't look like an idiot, I want people to understand. Oh, it actually pulled up Bubbles. Like the Bubbles, you put a little
Trailer
wand in
Park
and blow.
Boys.
Okay, here we go.
Although I love that show.
Yeah, over. Yeah, right there. Yeah, there it is. Now put Bert up on the screen real quick.
Let's see.
Go back to that last one. You had a good one. Yeah, right there. Now put Bert on the screen.
Okay.
On the camera.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now look straight at the camera, Bert. And try to make the same face this guy's making. Hold on.
Here, try this one. There you go.
Yeah, I see that. Okay.
All right, pull up Kurt Russell quick.
Okay. All right, Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell, give me a second here.
All right, let's see here.
Kurt Russell.
You've got old pictures of you that do look like Kurt Russell. I don't know if I can match it.
And
oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Okay.
See? That one second from the right. Yeah.
Oh, second from the left?
Or left, yeah. Yeah, see?
Okay, yeah.
I could see
I got
little.
Free pizza one time.
Did you?
Yeah, I got free pizza in...
Oh, that's my wife's favorite movie right there, Overboard.
Overboard.
Oh, yeah. That's her favorite movie, yeah.
That's a great one.
Is that about a wife throwing her husband overboard on a cruise?
No, it's a
Let me go through it.
Go ahead.
Okay, so it starts with, no, I'm not. Okay. Yes, you know, he, and then she, and romantic comedy and that.
Yeah,
we
that
watched
like
it two nights ago. Woman goes overboard, doesn't remember anything.
She's rich.
Gets with Kurt Russell, and he's super poor, and at the end, it's a happy ending, kind of romantic.
Yeah. Oh.
She fired him. He was working on something at her mansion. But
closet.
She has no memory. So he says, ooh, you know.
So he's like a gold digger.
It's kind of a creepy thing. But, you know, back then it was okay. So, I mean, I'll take the Kurt Russell look over Bubbles any day.
Yeah, we'll just stick with Kurt Russell. That's fine. You got a good Kurt Russell going on. I'm digging it. Anyway, that's all very important stuff. But I do want to mention this. One of the most fascinating, and I have not even made it through this in its entirety.
What?
Tucker Carlson on Joe Rogan.
Oh, man.
Have you seen any of this yet?
No.
Oh, it's phenomenal. So Tucker sits down with Joe Rogan. They go for 3 hours, bro. 3 hours. Joe Rogan.
Okay, wait a minute. So Tucker's on Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan's not on Tucker.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Tucker is in Joe Rogan's studio. And when they do, like Tucker's, I don't want to say Tucker's podcast is buttoned up, but it's a little more structured, I guess. Joe Rogan's just a free-for-all. They got the mics on, and they talk about anything. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe one of my favorites to date. And that says a lot, because he's had a lot of good ones. Tony Gump and myself love the Alex Jones podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, they start talking about Alex Jones at one point where they mention how many times Alex Jones has gotten things right. And I don't even know if you realize some of this. Like, Alex Jones has called things like 9/11 before it happened. Not just saying there's going to be a terror attack, but saying they're going to blow up the World Trade Center, and then they're going to turn around and blame Osama bin Laden for it.
So he's the OG Nostradamus style.
Yes, he's the Nostradamus. Tony, give me that clip of Tucker Carlson. Yeah, on Rogan talking about. Is this the one talking about Alex Jones?
I think so, yeah.
Let's go with this.
I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think was a revolutionary act, actually. Not that everything Alex Jones says is right. It's not. Not everything I say is right or anyone says is right. But Alex Jones is an interesting person. And even if he's not interesting, he has been walled off from the rest of us through name calling. And your willingness to be like, no, actually, we're just going to listen to Alex Jones and you can decide for yourself.
Well, Alex has been my friend for more than 20 years.
But I'm sure you have other friends you haven't invited.
Yeah, look at this.
Right. You were not allowed to talk to him. And when you hear Alex Jones talk, you definitely understand why they told you you couldn't listen to Alex Jones.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I had him as one of the first guests when I came over to Spotify.
Love that.
I was like, let's go.
What did they say?
Well, a lot of people weren't happy. We lost sponsors. It was an issue. But I think it did the job. And one of the reasons why he's gone through some issues is because that guy is uncovering real shit that's terrifying every fucking day.
Cutting out the cuss words
so
for us.
So many lies and so much propaganda and so many psyops that are being done on people. You start seeing them where they don't exist. And that's what he did.
Well, and he's also channeling some stuff. You can't call 9/11 in detail because you're super informed.
The fact.
He called it.
Yes.
He literally called it in the summer of 2001. He said planes will fly into the World Trade Centers and they will blame a man called Osama bin Laden.
We know the government's planning terrorism. We know Oklahoma City and World Trade Center was terrorism. We know the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to blow up airliners. If you do it, we're going to blame you because we know who's up to it. Or if you let some terrorist group do it, like the World Trade Center, we know who to blame. If any terrorism comes, it's from this government. And if there was an outside threat like a bin Laden, who was a known CIA asset in the 80s, running the Mujahideen War, and whose family builds all the military bases over in Saudi Arabia right now, and sits on the board of Iridium Satellite,
oof,
he's the boogeyman they need. This Orwellian phony system.
We know that he said that because he said it on tape.
Yeah.
Multiple times. And then he said, call the White House and tell them this.
Now I'm going to put the call out that you call the White House and tell them, look, we've seen the news stories that you've wanted to blow things up, that you have blown things up, and that we're aware of who the terrorists are if you pull this. This can stop this Hitlerian Reichstag event.
He's channeling something.
You think
that's
so?
Super. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
There's like no other. I mean, tell me how he did it otherwise. I've asked him about it. How did you do that? At length, he had dinner at my barn recently. We were talking about this. How'd you do that? I don't know. It just came to me. And that's real. And that's not a new phenomenon. It's happened throughout history. There are people called prophets. And there are people who were prophets who weren't called prophets. But there are people who have information or parts of information, bits of information, visions of information come to them. And then they relay it. It's not from them. They received it. This is like the, you know, one of the oldest phenomena in human history. So those people tend to be a little crazy, a little unbalanced, a little different from everybody else. Do you know what I mean? They live on locusts and honey in the wilderness. I mean, that's just like, they're not like everybody else. And that's clearly part of what, I'm not saying that everything that Alex Jones says is a prophecy from God. It's not. But that was prophetic. And if it wasn't, tell me how it wasn't. In July of 2000, like I lived in Washington in July of 2001, you know, my dad worked in the government. Like I was as well informed as anybody could be about what was going on in the government. I've always been interested in what's happening in other countries. I was aware of Osama bin Laden. I knew about the Taliban. I knew, you know, more than most people. There's not one person who was saying, not one person in Washington, D.C. was saying, you know, at some point soon, they may fly airplanes into the World Trade Centers and blame Osama bin Laden. Like that just wasn't a thing. So if you said that multiple times on camera, there's a reason. I've said this to 50 people, what I just said to you, and they all look at me like, yeah, that's stupid. Tell me how it's stupid. Like, tell me how he did that. Like, that's impossible, actually.
He didn't just do it with that either.
No, I'm aware.
He's done it with a lot of things.
Today, in 2002, there is a tyrannical organization calling itself the New World Order, pushing for worldwide government, a cashless society, open borders, total and complete tyranny.
The Rockefeller study envisions future dictatorship controlled by elite, millions being killed, mandatory quarantines, checkpoints, and the forced vaccines.
I remember that one.
The hell we're already living in that's just going to continue to intensify until we take our governments back. You're not going to be able to go to the ball games anymore. You're not going to be able to just go out and get drunk with your friends. You're not going to be able to just, you know, go out and enjoy yourself all the time. Read what these monsters are planning for you. A bioweapon release could be the thing they'd release to bring in a world government to counter a global problem. And the UN has said that a global pandemic is the only thing that may save their world government. It may not be this year, but this is the globalist plan. So if you start seeing a bunch of people die in China, and you see it, oh, 1,000 dead, 100,000
dead. Wow.
On these airplanes, and you won't have anywhere to go.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Looking at a giant war in February right now, I predict the Russians are going to roll in. They're already there. They're going to roll in.
With attacks across Ukraine, which is the size of Texas.
And I believe Tucker, he's hardcore, he's awake. The left admits it. I predict he won't be at Fox News in the near future. I'm going to leave it at that. By the way, Fox News needs Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson doesn't need Fox News.
There continues to be reaction to the bombshell news that Tucker Carlson, the highest rated personality on Fox News, has been fired.
We're here with the world's most dangerous man, the most censored man in the English language, Alex Jones.
Man. man, that's good stuff. Wow. That's good stuff.
I'll tell you what really killed me is that the date of 2010 when he was calling.
The lockdowns.
Everything that was happening. That's a decade.
And then he was saying that in 2018 that they're going to try to release a bioweapon. Let's be careful what we say here. Mm-hmm. They're going to release a bioweapon. And when you start seeing a bunch of people dying in China, know it's on the way. It's exactly what played out.
Yep.
I think he's had some inside baseball for a long time with some people.
That's the first time that I've heard him referred to as a prophet. And I do give that a little bit of credence, but I don't necessarily mean it in a, I don't know, like a biblical sense. I don't want to say that Alex Jones is some sort of, you know, prophet from God, but there is something where he's seeing this stuff before it happens. He is in tune. He is informed. I mean, we do some of these things on the show, and we call things before they happen, mm-hmm. but not like that, and not during that period of time. 2001, you know how hard it would have been to put a radio show together in 2001 and to be that in tune when everybody was rah-rah Democrat, Republican, like you just, it was just known, you just pick a side, and he's like out there like on the fringes.
Let's have a little fun. And let's say, and it sounds like a movie probably, but let's say there's somebody in this organization, this global organization that does not, and maybe has had a change of heart, and is giving Alex Jones that information to get out.
Hmm.
I think that might be part of it, but ultimately I think it's a team versus team type aspect in his mind. So when you get to learn all the other team's plays and what's on their playbook, you can kind of start to get a sense of what's coming next. And I think that's what's happened. Just like football teams playing against each other, you play against the same teams so many times, you're going to start to learn their plays and you're going to kind of know what they're doing. That's not necessarily the best, you know, example, but I think he kind of knew the game plans that they had, and I think he knows future ones like the alien thing. There's other things that he's mentioned that hasn't happened too.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both of those actually, because he does have some inside sources, and you've heard him refer to them where he'll say, I got senior intelligence officials telling me blah, 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 blah. But then at the same time, he's been doing this for so long, he knows, and we do too to an extent, but not quite like this guy. Like, he knows the playbook, mm-hmm. and so he's able to make educated guesses as to what's coming next. So
I can say that before the pandemic, if you would have been watching Alex Jones, and I've said this before, if you would have paid attention to him instead of the mainstream media before, during, and whatever during the pandemic, you'd have been way better off.
Mm-hmm. We got a little comfortable when Trump was in office.
Yeah.
We were like, whatever happens, like, Trump's a boss, man. He'll be able to handle it. But we didn't think that they would be capable of what they did. That's crazy. Think about in retrospect what they did. They literally closed the entire country. I mean, I was watching a clip from WWF the other day, or WWE, and just like in all sports, they were doing their live shows, but instead of having a crowd, they had TV screens in the audience. They were doing it in like small arenas, and they just had TV screens surrounding the ring, and people would zoom in, fans would zoom in and be on their webcam in the arena to make it look like they had an audience. I'm like, how stupid were we to fall for that? Even, listen, we all fell for it at least for a week, 2 weeks. We're like, oh, yeah, if we just 2 weeks to slow the spread. And then once it starts stretching out, we're like, no, wait a minute. That's not what you said. And so it started clicking. But I just look back at some of the ways we were operating. I'm like, God, how could we be so gullible as a society.
Cardboard cutouts at ball games.
Yes.
And TV shows. God. I mean,
not to mention you can smell a fart through a mask.
Surely, right.
You know.
Right. Most of us thought the mask thing was dumb.
I thought the mask thing was dumb, but what got me was the burgers and fries in New York and then the lottery. So that's what made me not.
Oh, can you find that on maybe on Twitter? Put Bill de Blasio COVID burger or something. So do you remember that, John Burt?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you mean if you get a vaccine, you can get some fries, some free fries? What about a burger element? This is one of the most cringe things I've ever seen in my life.
I think I found it.
Yeah, go to the second one. I bet that'll...
That's
or that'll be fine. Yeah, go with that one.
Okay, here we go.
That's good.
Right. You're saying I could get this?
I was watching this live, and that's my point. I said, no, I'm not doing it.
But there's also a burger element to this? Let me check with Bill Neidhart. Is it too early in the day to eat a burger?
No.
This could be breakfast?
Good to
go. Okay. Oh. I want you to look at this and think about, again, some people love hamburgers, some don't. Really want to respect all ways of life. But if this is appealing to you, just think of this when you think of vaccination.
Mm. What?
Vaccination. Mm.
I'm
getting a very good feeling.
And to think, they were trying to convince you to get the vaccine by giving you a free burger and fries.
I got this vibe of used car salesman, end of the month, hasn't met his quota, and he needs people to get his product.
Yeah. Yes. And now look at us.
Yeah, that scared me off, that clip right there. And then the lotteries, too, in Ohio and the other states. I thought, nah.
You mean to tell me there's a burger element to this? When you think of Axine Vase, think of this burger.
What kind of respect for the American people does that show?
What kind of respect do you have for yourself to even do that on a stage? Because everybody, he probably, like, there were so many people watching the news, even the local news or local officials, because they were trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, even in the Axine Vay days, as we were getting closer to that, and it's like, bro.
What about that lady that got up on that podium in front of those steps and said, I'm not asking what's in it, I'm not.
I'm just
taking it, and it was like, I'm not questioning anything, and she's trying to sound smart. Oh,
bunch of idiots.
Anyway.
Let's go back to 9/11. Illuminati bot tweeted this out, and I don't really understand. Give me real quick the caption. Tell me what the caption said on that again, on the tweet. Says, rare footage inside World Trade Center Building 7, on 9/11 after the destruction of the Twin Towers. This 47-story steel-framed skyscraper completely collapsed due to office fires a few hours later. Notice anything interesting? And you'll see this building, okay, and I know I'm kind of just jumping around at this point, but you'll see this building that looks like it's kind of intact, right? Everybody remembers what happens to Building 7. It just randomly falls down.
Right.
What you see in Building 7 here is just the aftermath of buildings beside it, you know, imploding or whatever. Anyway, go ahead. Debris, windows busted out, like.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any fires there.
Doesn't seem to be a lot of structural damage either, right?
Mm-mm.
And it's only 47 stories. It's not near as tall as...
It's nothing to sneeze at.
Well, yeah.
It's a Secret Service.
No, they evacuated everybody down. All right, they're probably going to the bus. Thank you.
Thank you.
the side of the building come down?
I don't know. Something fell. What'd you see?
It was pretty clear at one point, and then there's a whole bunch of smoke and glass. And I think we're just about the last ones in this building right now. I think you should leave. Everybody else is gone.
Okay.
I'll just make sure that there's nobody else coming downstairs.
What do you think happened?
I hear the top of the building fell down. Fell over on us. I don't know. I haven't seen outside yet.
Have you, when were you here?
Pardon me?
After the planes landed?
As a matter of fact, we're standing right underneath 6th World Trade when the plane hit it the first time.
Describe it.
A plane, the engine screaming, and then just an explosion. Glass, then everybody was running around trying to get away.
Have your name and spell it?
Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T-E.
Sergeant?
Secret Service.
Secret Service? How do you want your title?
OST.
OST, thank you.
All right.
And this thing imploded on itself, just like the Trade Centers did.
Hmm.
That siren's getting to me.
Yeah, you can mute it and we can just watch it. But again, you look at it, it doesn't seem structurally compromised.
Yeah, there's no fire. I'm not seeing, it looks,
I don't know, man. If you're not willing to question this, you're just being naive, in my opinion. Like, you don't have to be, a 9/11 truther. And I know some people are scared to talk about that, especially people in our business, like radio hosts across the country, especially that have been in the business for a long time. At one time, it was like, it's a no-no because it was a very sensitive topic. So you don't say, 9/11 was an inside job. We don't care, apparently.
We got a whole generation that was born after that. I mean, you got all these people that, young people that could care less.
Well, you've also got young people that can look at it objectively and detach themselves from the emotions we felt that day, mm-hmm. because the emotions we felt that day has dictated this narrative that you can't question it. Because, again, it was sensitive. We lost almost 3,000 people and countless others after that. So, it was just kind of a, it was almost viewed as mocking 9/11 if you were to say it's an inside job. It's like, no. We're trying to appropriately place the blame is what we're doing here. We're actually trying to bring justice to the situation by talking about it. And Tony knows about this stuff, almost better than anybody.
Yeah, and personally, I just like asking questions. I don't even know definitively what happened. There's just a lot of weird stuff. A
bunch of evil stuff in our society.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of that.
You said something about, what was you telling me before we left the station?
What?
Something about Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've talked about Hollywood. And
speaking of evil,
yeah, and just like the award show and Sam Smith, and this demonic looking stuff.
Well, demonic stuff.
Yes. Well, I was I was on the talk, watching my kitty cat and doggy videos.
That's how you talk when you're fixedy.
Yeah,
was on the talk.
Good old the talk. Shut up.
Anyway, go ahead.
No. And there was a guy who was, like you said, I used to be a Justin Timberlake fan, and I've just watched his video, and he started to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, just go look it up.
Okay.
And, he said, we're looking. So I was like, okay, I did. And, it starts out like a typical I'm still hip.
Yeah.
The whole beat's
bringing sexy back.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And then about halfway through, it completely changes.
Hmm.
It completely changes the point where you're like, what the fuck am I watching? So I got the video, but I took out his music and just put some royalty-free music in there so we won't have any issues. And I only did the part where it gets weird. Now, remember before that, there's like this dance floor with sexy people dancing around. It's, it's a dark club and all that.
Yeah.
And then at this point, it just really
gets it dark.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about thriller dark. You know, that was sort of comedy. This
is
makes
demonic.
You feel creepy.
Want me to play it?
Yeah. Play that for us. Okay. Play us John Byrd's
royalty-free
version.
And he's still singing about dance. No angels on the dance floor.
Oh, is that what it's called? No angels?
No angels.
Oh, of course.
All right, here we go.
All right, you know, they're just typically doing the thing. And then he looks up and sees himself, evil version of himself. Now watch.
He is looking old.
Yeah.
What?
It's like, what the hell? Oh, it gets a lot more interesting.
It's like an old Duran Duran video or something.
Look, everybody's eyes are rolled back.
It's a satanic dance party.
This should have been like Hungry Like the Wolf or something.
Wait. Now you got to remember the music is my music.
Yeah, it doesn't really match. I mean, you did a good job matching it.
Yeah, it was Utter Silence.
Okay.
There she is.
Yeah. And then watch what happens, what comes out of her.
She about to give birth? Only thing that would make this more creepy is... Oh, God!
On his face.
Oh, come on! Good Lord!
Says everybody making out.
This is like a
blood all over.
Modern day Democrat Party spirit cooking. Maria Abramovich must have produced this video. The only thing that would have made that more creepy is if they would have thrown up one of those TikToks of Britney Spears dancing. Yeah. You know, how she's like crazy and all that now. Yeah, that's.
But a lot of the videos now, there's that. There's just that element. It's so obvious.
It's bizarre. Man, Hollywood's evil, dude. The music, the media, the Hollywood, it's all freaking demonic. Anyway, I'm completely creeped out at this point, so I think we should end this podcast. Tony Gump, do you have anything for us?
I'm creeped out too, but get plenty of water, meat, sunlight, and sleep, and you'll be fine.
Water, meat, sunlight, sleep. Everybody together.
Water, meat, sunlight, sleep.
Water, meat, sunlight, sleep. Modern meat, sunlight, sleep.
Water, sleep.
I forgot what it was. All right. John Byrd, final words.
Yes. What was your favorite cereal as a kid? Think about that and then go out and buy it and have a bowl on me and just think about the good times because they're gone.
Are they ever coming back?
I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think?
I get Kurt Russell vibes.
I don't like that one. Let's. We got about 60 seconds, okay? Let's try again.
Okay.
Come up with something different.
Okay. All
right. John Byrd.
Yes.
Final words.
Yes. Whether you're young or old, it's important to take care of your skin. Wash your face. I know as a kid, you know, we don't like to, you know, this and that. But it's important because the epidermis is the largest organ in your body.
Yep.
And just like everything else, if you don't take care of it, you're really going to pay for it when you get older. So kids, moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, everybody, stay clean.
All right. That's a wrap. We're out of here. Thank you. Thank you, Tony Gump. Thank you, John Byrd.
You're welcome.
And until next time, I didn't have my pen all episode, so I didn't know what to do with my hand. Circle!